how we can think about AI in the space of patient engagement. And we think of it in two broad categories. There is the side where we want to optimize this campaign, and the goal, the optimization function of the campaign is maximize conversion, minimize cost. And there is space within AI, within theoretical space of reinforcement learning, that is very applicable to how we think about running a campaign and optimizing for those two objectives, where at each step in the campaign, we get to decide what the next step should be.
Welcome to Unlocking the AI Advantage podcast. We are here to fast track your success by leveraging the power of AI in business. Each episode brings you closer to the cutting edge of technology and entrepreneurship. Let's dive into the world of AI and make extraordinary strides in your journey. Are you ready? Let's go.
Of the Unlocking the AI Advantage podcast. And this is your host, Ramesh Danta. And for the very first time, I'm doing this podcast recording episode from a conference. And this conference is VIVE in Los Angeles. So we are here end of February. And surprisingly, this is the first time that I have attended the VIVE conference. I'm very, very excited. And then I happened to meet the founder of Activation Patient Engagement Company. The founder's name is Gino Korolev. We'll be talking to Gino today. And his company name is Furtu. Gino, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So Gino, let's get started. First, your company, Furtu. So what does Furtu mean?
Furtu is personalized outreach for the person, for you.
Or is that the meaning of the word?
That's
which language?
Latin.
I said this company, Furtu, does patient activation and patient engagement. Let me know what that means.
Companies in healthcare need to engage patients. That's probably the biggest problem in healthcare. And we started with point solutions. We started with value-based care point solutions where they sell into health plans. They get access to a certain population, tens of thousands of people.
So you already mentioned a few things. First thing is value-based care. And then you also said health provider, right? So let's start with the health provider. Who are health providers? Give us examples.
Probably some of the more known ones, Omada Health, Livongo, Teladoc, diabetes management solutions, mental health, cardio.
And you said the healthcare systems need, and then they're lacking in patient engagement and activation. So what is the problem that you're trying to solve?
The problem that we solve is a point solution will have, they'll contract with a health plan using a value-based care contract. Under that contract, they'll have access to a population. Let's say 10,000 people with type 2 diabetes. Now they want to convert as many of those eligible individuals into users of their platform.
Okay.
Very often their contract will be structured around outcomes for enrolled individuals. And so they are very motivated to try to get those individuals that need this help to become users of the platform.
So can you give examples of what kind of outcomes?
Absolutely. So with diabetes, it could be a reduction in A1C. That's the primary clinical metric. There could be financial outcomes. There could be HEDIS gaps in care that the health plan may want help closing through this provider.
So Furtu does, you know, engage in this and to show the outcomes to people who signed up with Furtu in a value-based case.
Correct.
And typically, how do you get started? So just take us through the process of, signing up with a customer.
Absolutely. So what we look for is, for that particular segment, we look for a customer that has access to the population. They have a contract. Effectively, they have a list of individuals that they would like to tell that they exist, that very often they are covered as part of their health plan, as part of their benefits, and they should come and join and they'll get some benefit from joining this program.
Your customers are typically the providers?
Correct. Digital health point solutions, just to distinguish it from kind of the more common providers.
Is that your starting point or the patients are the starting point for you?
No, it's the providers that are the starting point, the point solutions, because they contract with a health plan. Yeah. Under that contract, they get the population and they can then, as part of the contract, they're allowed to market to that population. They're allowed to contact that population.
And then what does Fortu do? So once that is onboarding is done, then what do you guys do?
We do patient outreach. So we will do direct mail, telephonic outreach, email, text, everything that the contract, again, going back to the contract, allows this provider to do to reach out to the population. And so we build this platform to enable omni-channel communications as part of the campaign, where in week one, you might get a letter, in week two, you might get a phone call, in week three, you might get a text. And the idea is that the contact data is imperfect and you need many different modalities to try to reach the audience.
And then you did the outreach. So that's the patient engagement piece of it.
Correct.
And then you're measuring their reactions or replies or whatever the right word is, the patients, right?
Correct.
And then the provider is, you know, monitoring and then seeing the effective response rate from that, right? So can you translate this into business terms, like in terms of reduction in costs or increase in revenues? Like how does it translate into a provider's business?
Yeah, the most direct term is cost of acquisition. And from that perspective, it's how much money this provider is spending to acquire the next user. And we've shown substantial improvement in reducing that cost of acquisition for providers. But you're right, there is also the revenue, which is the lagging indicator, because once they have that user and we help the provider engage that user in various activities, part of the program, down the road, they're able to get paid for that user. They're able to get revenue for that user. And so there is this direct relationship between converting the user, adding the new user, and driving revenue.
So then is there a upsell piece into this thing that the provider wants to sell services and all that stuff somehow baked into this one, or that is not part of the equation here in the engagement?
We usually talk when we are selling the product, we talk about user acquisition and user engagement, the two use cases, the two broad use cases that we address, we help them address. And there is obviously cost of acquisition with the activation use case, but then engagement and making sure that the person engages through the program to get to those clinical outcomes that the health plan wants is how we tie to the revenue.
I'm still trying to dig into and digest all that thing that's there. So for example, I'm aware of email marketing solutions, right? So where, you know, there's the campaigns that are put in place and all the stuff. So do they play into Fortu's business, or they're totally different, separate from in the patient engagement space?
They're very related. So we think of it as there are direct communication channels.
Okay.
And we believe that some channels are not as effective for healthcare use case for structural reasons. So health plans in the United States for the longest time did not collect email addresses. And so as a provider, you would get a list with 10,000 names, 10,000 addresses, and 1,000 email addresses. And so if you only had email as your available channel, you would only reach 1,000 people. Very often you'd get 10,000 mailing addresses, but to reach out to all these individuals using direct mail would be very, very costly. And so how to balance it and how to prioritize is some of the intelligence that we would add.
So does the Fortu go and fill the gaps with respect to, so the 9,000 in this example you gave, they did not have email addresses. You would go and collect the email addresses, and maybe you didn't have cell phone numbers to reach out to them with the text messages. So all those gaps also fill through Fortu, or is it some other solution provides that?
It's actually a pretty complicated answer. The problem there is that we get the permission to use that data for a particular use case from the health plan. That flows through the business associate agreement with the provider and subcontractor business associate agreement to Fortu. And that HIPAA framework limits what we're allowed to do and what we can do in terms of enriching data. Now, if the health plan permits this data enrichment, there are vendors out there that are able to add data from the consumer databases and fill in the gap in emails, for example. However, it's very rare that we can see this kind of permission. And it's for a good reason, because the way it happens, it can lead to false positives. You can match against the wrong individual, get the wrong email, And all of a sudden, you're disclosing PHI to the wrong email. And so that's why it's pretty complicated.
So unless the patient, he or she themselves, give that information to fill the gaps, that's probably the best way to do it.
Correct. And that's a great point because, for example, we can do direct mail with a form that a person can fill out by hand and mail back, or with a QR code that they can scan and fill in the form online and provide the email information. Yeah. And so in that case, we did collect the email in directly from the person, and now we are able to use that email in subsequent communications. Again, lowering the cost of outreach, lowering the cost of engagement.
Now I have a good idea. So basically, Furdu is providing a platform to the providers to do the patient activation and patient engagement, okay? So again, that is a very broad, right? So, I mean, do you guys specialize in certain areas, a certain geography, or certain specific domains of healthcare? How do you focus?
Yeah, we do focus on relatively early stage, I'd say like Series A and beyond, Series A, around Series A type companies that have a contract with a health plan, have a pretty immediate need to do this type of engagement and outreach to the population, especially if they're about to start, they just entered into value-based care model and contract. So there is an immediate need, urgency, a population that is real, and in that case, it's definitely a target. So we do not specialize in terms of condition or anything like that. So far, we've done outreach to populations, Medicare, Medicaid, duals, spectrum of different conditions, heart failure, mental health, diabetes management. So it's a pretty broad application.
How did you finalize your focus on the early stage companies? And then is there something in your background, the company's background, that allowed you or it gave, so you said, hey, this is where we need to focus on?
Yeah, absolutely. So the reason why we started with early stage companies is the length of the sales cycle and the need that they usually experience when they're ready to get moving, get going.
Okay.
My background, kind of the origin of Furdu is from my past company. The name of the company was Onduo. It was acquired by Verily in 2020. It wasn't diabetes management. It was a joint venture between Verily and Sanofi. And we were selling into health plans, and we would get a population, people with type 2 diabetes. And I've kind of spent a long time thinking about this patient engagement infrastructure and lived through the pain of creating a Frankenstein version of what we ended up building at Furdu, where we took an off-the-shelf marketing automation platform that is HIPAA compliant and then kind of learned the hard way that email and text is not enough. We have to have other channels, and we have to integrate those other channels by investing engineering resources and other resources to connect the dots, make the data pipelines work, make the campaigns work, make the reporting work. And all of that basically created a fairly significant distraction, fairly significant expense to operate this infrastructure.
Okay, so you have a prior background. I mean, so that gets into the next stage of the discussion. So there's a problem that you saw, and then you have a background in that particular domain, and that led you to think that, hey, there is an opportunity right here for me to start a company. So how old is Furdu?
Furdu is just over 2 years old.
2 years old. And then you also said there was a transition where you sold the company, or the company was sold. So how did the transition happen? You know, just talk to us through the transition phase and when the light bulb went off and said, hey, this is where I'm going to start Furdu.
Yeah, it's interesting because the light bulb has been on for some time because when we were pitching Onduo to health plans, we would talk about what we used to call the enrollment engine. And even back then, it felt like a separate product. It's a separate general purpose product that could exist on its own merit. And later on, during the pandemic, when we saw kind of many companies spring up in this space, focusing on telemedicine, remote patient monitoring, just digital health booming at that point, it occurred to me that many, many of these companies would have to reinvent that concept of patient activation infrastructure. And it felt like it did not need to be done just because it would be so, so costly and inefficient for each one of those companies to take an off-the-shelf system and then try to Frankenstein it into a healthcare-adopted solution.
Okay. So then the light bulb went off, and then you said, okay, there is an opportunity for Furdu here. And then from that, you said it's been there for quite some time, right? So, and then there's an incorporation that happened. So how long did it take for you to actually build the platform? And then how did you fund the company during that phase? So can you talk a little bit about the inception of Furdu?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started Furdu in November 21. And we signed our first customer about 6 months later, maybe a little bit before that.
By the time you had the platform already built?
We had a beta version of that platform that we kind of used for demos, for sales, for conversations with potential investors.
But the first customer was a paying customer, or was it more a piloting customer?
It was a 6 month pilot that converted into a fully paying customer. It started as a paid pilot, though.
And that was through your network? Because somebody that you knew, and then they trusted in you and all this stuff.
Yep, exactly.
For the 6 months, you funded yourself out of pocket, or friends and family, or what is it?
There was one angel check, again, but for the most part, it was self-funded, yeah.
So you got a first paying, was it sufficient revenue at that stage with the one customer to sustain, or you still needed extra outside funding?
We still needed outside funding. We were fortunate enough to join an accelerator called Character Labs, Product Market Fit Accelerator.
Where is it based out of?
The accelerator was remote at the time, but it's based out of, I'm blanking, Milwaukee. So the concept for the accelerator came from Google Ventures and the method that was developed at Google Ventures around sprint and developing a prototype, and then doing series of interviews with customers to de-risk various hypotheses about the business using the prototype, using kind of getting the reaction directly on the product prototype with the customers. It was a very, very structured accelerator that I think benefited us quite a bit. There was also a bit of cash that was invested as part of the accelerator.
Okay, that's what I was about to ask. So it's not a just a mentoring accelerator, it's also a funding accelerator.
Correct.
Okay. A bunch of our audience are also budding entrepreneurs, they're interested in entrepreneurship, and that's why I just want to walk through the step. And then how did you come across this accelerator, and then why you think you got accepted?
That's a great question, and I'm just going back in my memory. One of the colleagues from Verily introduced us to the partners at the fund that are running the accelerator. And so this is a former Google Ventures design partner, and was very interested in this space because at Google Ventures, they've helped several very known companies, I believe, like including One Medical. Fairly certain, like one of the cases in the book is about One Medical. And he kind of experienced this problem where healthcare companies struggle with patient engagement. And the way we kind of approached the idea and approached the problem was interesting.
So again, time and again, I hear this, the power of networking, right? I mean, it's here, somebody that knew a previous company, and then introduce you to this ventures, and then that opened the doors for you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's the power of network is indispensable. The experience over the 3 or 4 years at Onduo, building the product, experiencing the problem, but also being, for example, in the boardroom or at the JV steering committee meetings where those relationships and those networks got formed.
Great, great. Thanks, Gino. So as I was alluding, so I want to get to a personal story a little bit. So Gino Korolev, you are a founder, or maybe should I say co-founder? How many founders of the company are there?
Two co-founders.
So you are on the business side, the tech side?
More on the business side.
More on the business side. Yeah, so typically I see the delineation anyway. You are a founder and entrepreneur now. This is your first venture?
Yeah, first real venture.
Did you always have entrepreneurial characteristics in you? I mean, somebody you got mentored by somebody? How did your entrepreneur story come about?
I want to say yes. And My co-founder would probably say that, so I've known him for about 20 years, and for the past 20 years, I would come up with ideas, and I would pitch these ideas to him, and
All in healthcare space?
No, definitely not. I got into healthcare probably 12 years ago.
Okay.
But, and incidentally, he also got into healthcare around that time. But yeah.
Then what happened to those ideas? Like, did they stay in idea stage, or did you actually kick the tires and do something with ideas? And so, yeah.
So we started the venture, I believe in 2010 together, that focused more on data analytics and back then budding app store markets.
That seemed like the right time, actually, for those markets at that time.
Yeah.
2010. You could have been like a Uber or, you know, so Airbnb or something, huh?
Yeah, it was an interesting idea. I think we still like the concept. I think the target market that we ended up picking, the target customer, was not the right target customer. But the other big takeaway from back then, from that venture, was it's, I think, impossible to do a venture part-time.
I was about to ask you, so it's a side gig. You're trying to do something.
That one was a side gig for all of the co-founders, and it proved to be unsustainable.
How long did you guys spend time on that one?
About 6 months.
6 months. And then afterwards, you realize that is not sustainable the way you're doing. And then you dropped off. And then what afterwards? Any other ventures?
No. So after that, I went to business school. And
where did you go to business school?
I went to MIT.
Full-time or part-time?
Full-time.
Oh, you quit cold turkey?
Yes.
And then you went to MIT, Sloan?
Yeah.
Okay. And then afterwards you joined Verily?
Afterwards I joined Google, and soon after I, kind of by way of Verily, joined Undo.
Before, what's your prior education before MBA? So tech?
Tech, computer science.
I mean, it seems a very familiar pattern. So I was expecting something unfamiliar. You're an art graduate and then somehow got into kind of thing. So now you became another boring kind of entrepreneur, right? So anyway, so this is good, right?
The cookie cutter entrepreneur.
Cookie cutter entrepreneur, man. It's a computer science tech graduate, work for some time and then go to a top tier MBA and then work at one of the top companies. And so you had all the bricks laid out for a very solid foundation to be an entrepreneur here. Since you started Fortu, and you are a post-revenue, you're saying, right now?
At this point, yeah.
Then the first 6 months you got a customer, and then it all seems like a fairy tale, like nothing is going wrong for you. Everything is all good. Is that right?
It may seem that way.
Okay.
But the reality is it's tough because we're a very small team. They're very lean. We have several customers now. That means that this small team needs to build product, needs to operate the system for our customers. And we need to sell, we need to fundraise, we need to do all the things. And again, we raised very little money for a number of reasons. And so right now the focus is extending our runway as much as possible, raising a little bit more, adding more customers, revenue, demonstrating traction, and then pursuing seed fundraising later this year.
Fantastic. So, did you know, we are in 2024, and for this year, for sure, you cannot have any conversation without talking about artificial intelligence, right? So, I'm surprised that we have not gotten into it. So, but I'm 100% positive and sure that you have AI features in your platform on the roadmap or in implementation. So talk about what is AI ML going to do in the patient activation, patient engagement space. So what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, so it's complicated and I don't want to oversell. So we have some ideas on our roadmap that are the basis of those ideas is in AI.
Okay.
The way we went about it is there is kind of the prerequisites for AI. And the prerequisites is the data set.
Yeah.
And so now we have the data set and we have contractually permission to use the data to train models, which I think is important because, again, this is not our data. This is not our customer's data necessarily. This is health plan data and making sure that contractually this data set can be used to train the models to build AI features is important. That's number one. Number two is how we can think about AI in this space.
What are the use cases?
Patient engagement.
Yeah.
And we think of it in two broad categories. There is the side where we want to optimize this campaign, and the goal, the optimization function of the campaign, is maximize conversion, minimize cost. And there is space within AI, within theoretical space of reinforcement learning, that is very applicable to how we think about running a campaign and optimizing for those two objectives, where at each step in the campaign, we get to decide what the next step should be. So think of it this way. Today, an activation campaign might mean week one, someone gets an email, week two, someone gets a phone call, week three, someone gets a letter.
Yeah.
With reinforcement learning, on week two, the system would evaluate what should be the channel for this specific individual. And based on the data set, based on what we know, use that channel for the outreach instead of one static campaign for everyone.
Got it. Okay. So let me ask you these questions. Many times people are talking about AI because they have to, right? So they're force fitting AI into the things. And because otherwise you're not relevant, because many of the startup pitches, 70-80%, you know, it's like they only hear AI, but it's difficult to see what's real and what's not. Do you think that you are at a stage where you have to talk about AI in the context of your roadmap? You're trying to force fit? Or do you really see that AI has some benefits to having on the roadmap?
I think it depends on the audience. And when we're talking to our customers and they have a very straightforward need, they need to reach out to this population, they need to reduce the cost of outreach, they need to maximize conversion. The capabilities of the system today will allow them to get fairly good results. Okay. When we're talking to investors, when we're talking kind of more broadly about our vision, about our long-term approach to this problem, AI definitely has a significant component. And one example is reinforcement learning. Another example is, again, with many caveats, how can we apply generative AI to create the message for the consumer that's reading level appropriate? So think of it this way. There is a copy that's written that explains why this particular diabetes management program is appropriate for you. Now, imagine that you have third grade reading level, fifth grade reading level, 10th grade reading level. If we have some input, some indication about which reading level we should be using, which language, we can generate variants of that initial copy that is adapted for that particular reading level.
I see.
And so we've actually started talking to another company that does it in literacy space to enable literacy and education by downgrading reading level for some of the classics.
But how do you know, like, whether you need to downgrade or upgrade reading levels? Like,
you don't know it directly.
Okay.
But there is quite a bit of information. For example, census data will tell you that on average in this particular zip code, the reading level is X.
Interesting. Okay, I see. So those are all the things that you're... So just to increase the engagement.
Correct. Increase understanding, increase engagement.
Got it. So what's ahead for Fertu and what's ahead for Gino as an entrepreneur?
We need to grow, we need to fundraise, and we need to add...
Your intent is to grow with revenues, or your intent is to grow with investor funding? Or, like, can you talk a little bit about...
Yeah, absolutely. So the near-term goal is to grow with revenues.
Okay.
And continue on our go-to-market trajectory. I think we are seeing some really good signals in the past quarter, a lot of interest, and we'll continue building on that. There are some more exciting things that we're thinking about in terms of partnering with the enterprise side of healthcare, health plans.
I see.
And we want to explore and kind of do the sprint and the customer development and customer discovery for that product, for that segment. And building on that, we are going to build our fundraising story and go for that later this year.
As part of your personal story, you know, so do you think at this point of stage in your life, 2 years from after you started Fertu, do you feel comfortable that you're going to stay in this space as an entrepreneur forever? Or you think there may be some, you know, ups and downs in the journey that you may said, hey, this is not it, so I may have to go back to a study kind of a thing. I mean, you feel comfortable at this stage, end of 2 years?
Do I feel comfortable? No. And there is a phrase that I heard in the town halls at Google by Larry Page. I'm uncomfortably excited. And it rings very true because it's not a comfortable journey, but I don't really see myself doing something else. And I tried to leave healthcare once and it didn't stick. So I'm glad to be back.
So excited. Juno, thank you very much for sharing your story and sharing Fortis' story. So good luck and wishing you the very best on this journey.
Thank you very much. Thank you for hosting.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap on another insightful episode. But remember, the power lies in applying what you've learned. If you found value in our conversation today, please share it with others who could benefit, subscribe for more, and consider leaving us a review. Visit theaientrepreneurs.com for more resources, including golden gems of articles, ChatGPT prompts, AI tools, tutorials, gifts, and much more. Let's keep pushing the boundaries of what's possible. Until next time.